Hello and welcome to Real Talk here on KVSH 101.9 FM, Vashon Island, Washington. It's the voice of Vashon. I'm Susan McCabe, your host for Real Talk. This is the show about anything that piques curiosity, mine and yours. So you can send your suggestions for Real Talk to susan.mccabe@voiceofvashon.org or just info@voiceofvashon.org. We have been honoring women during Women's History Month here in March, and we've had already some wonderful guests. We had Melanie Klein, who gave us an overview of the history of the women's movement, Antonia Green, who spoke with us last week about women and madness, and this morning we have with us Bree Mathers, who is founder of Love the Skin You're In and author of the book Freedom to Blossom. She is a feminist activist and is particularly involved with helping women deal with body image and the media. Welcome, Bree. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Susan. So happy to be here.
Bree, how many years have you been working on the idea of women and their body image and how it affects their lives?
Well, this has been an area of passion for me since my recovery from an eating disorder when I was in high school. I went on to study women's studies at McGill, and Love the Skin You're In has really sort of come into full bloom over the last 10 years.
Tell us about Love the Skin You're In. What is it?
Yeah, Love the Skin You're In. It is a multimedia motivational event for mostly for young women and female-identified students that focuses on body image, hypersexualization of women in the media, and the incredible power of sisterhood and empathy in the process of building resiliency and resistance.
That says a lot. where do we go from here? The whole idea of body image, to my mind, has affected women for decades. Would that be an accurate assumption? And can you tell me if the impact of body image has been more powerful in more recent decades than it was, say, at the turn of the century?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I know the book The Beauty Myth by Naomi Wolf does a really wonderful expose on sort of the rise of the beauty myth, and she outlines in that book how in the 1950s women were being relied on to purchase things for the home, you know, whether it was the Hoover vacuum cleaner or, you know, special medicines for their children. And when in the 70s women came en masse into male spheres, she writes that that had to be overridden by this urgent social expedient that would turn their bodies into the prisons that their homes no longer were. So there's always been this sort of socioeconomic driving force underneath the beauty norms that we see. And I would say that we have definitely witnessed an escalation in, you know, insecurity and anxiety around our bodies. Certainly, I've seen that over the last, you know, even the last 5 years, certainly the last 10 years, with social media becoming such a prevalent means of communication, especially for middle school and high school aged young women.
That seems almost dichotomous to what we think is the women's movement and the presumably openness to, or the widening of the idea of what's feminine. To what do you attribute this escalation of the intensity of body image and its impact on young women?
Well, there does seem to be a backlash every time we're making steps forward. You know, when women got the vote, that was the very first time that the female body was basically stripped down, and you saw that kind of cigarette-style 1920s beauty, and suddenly she didn't have the same curves. And then in the 1950s, when women were back in the domestic sphere, they were sort of allowed to enjoy those sort of rounder, more fecund female forms, and that was even celebrated. And then again in the 70s, once we were out in the workforce en masse, suddenly the beauty ideals became stripped down and thin became in again. So there's definitely there's definitely been a mirror to any kind of political momentum that we've gained. It seems that there's also been some kind of backlash in the area, and that backlash is often expressed in terms of the ways that our bodies are being represented back to us in the media.
How much more do young women identify themselves or find their self-esteem in their body image now than they did, say, 10 or 20 years ago?
Well, see, this is where we get into a conversation about sexting, which is something that they are nearly all doing. Okay, so sexting has become kind of a form of social currency for them. And so they're sort of like sending off images of their bodies the way that boys would trade baseball cards. It's just become such a normal way to express yourself. And so they're definitely looking for that validation when there's that escalation in the texting back and forth that then turns into, okay, the top is off and it's a picture in a sports bra, and then, you know, the guy that's receiving and generally asking for the text on the other end is, you know, giving them an affirmative response, and eventually they're fully nude and that's being sent. And so young women, for the most part, would tell you that they experience power in this, that this is something that actually makes them feel powerful. And one of the things that I like to draw their attention to is that mainstream porn sites actually receive more hits monthly than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined. So you have the pornography industry, which has gained major, major traction. And you also have, according to Gail Dines, who's a researcher on the issue, apparently 90% of 12-year-olds are now watching pornography on their mobile devices. And so the conversation around body image is now not only about, are my breasts big enough, am I thin enough, but it's actually that disproportionately high school girls are all shaving their pubic areas and actually making their bodies, you know, look closer to an ideal that those of us who are older would probably, you know, say is pornographic.
That is shocking, honestly. Does that become competitive, and what does that, if indeed it does become competitive, what does that do to sisterhood among young women?
Well, it certainly does become competitive, and sisterhood is a major thrust of the work that I'm doing, and it's really, I think, important to point out to them, you know, the sort of industry forces that are at play in trying to carve out how they see, to point out to them things like social media platforms, like the one they're using, Instagram, Snapchat, that you actually have, like, these platforms have a social scientist, a neuroscientist, a psychologist that are all working and watching, you know, tween young women, say, interact with the platforms before they put it out. They're, each of these tweens is referred to as eyeballs, and of course the idea is to get eyeball engagement for the greatest number of seconds possible, and what the young women that are consuming these platforms don't necessarily recognize is that they are not actually the consumer, but the product.
Right.
So, you know, their eyeball time is being purchased by the advertiser that is paying the platform for the amount of engagement time they're giving. And so when you flip things around like that and you give them information about sort of the rise in pornography, and then you talk to them about the intersections that exist between pornography and human sex trafficking, it gives them another view and sort of helps them widen their view and widen their view of themselves and actually question why, you know, why we're all engaged in sexting in the way that we are.
And I guess I'm assuming that the girls are the products and boys of the same age are the consumers. Would that be a correct assumption?
You might say that for the most part in terms of sexting, but in most cases when a young woman sends a nudie of herself, she's going to get a dick pic back. So it definitely is going both ways. However, the girls don't tend to be asking for those dick pics.
So they're getting all kinds of positive response for doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, they're getting the validation and they're getting a hit. you know, I would say that they're getting the hit of the positive response. Plus, it kind of feels a little bit dangerous. Some of them are sending their photographs to men whom they do not know very well. You know, mostly guys that are their age who they know, that would be where the interest is for them. But they may not know the person very well either.
Do we have any sense of how this affects, or if it does affect, the incidence of sexual assault?
Well, I think that it is connected, you know. I mean, we definitely have this culture wherein there is this sense of entitlement that young men seem to feel around the female body, but you also have young women who don't have a sense of their own self-honoring or their own personal boundaries. And in the New York Times bestseller, Girls and Sex, Peggy Orenstein actually talks about these issues. She talks, you know, she interviewed 70 girls all across the nation. And what she found was that disproportionately, when it comes to, you know, engaging in sex, it's one way. So the girls are giving oral sex, but they're not receiving it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and they're also getting pressured and coerced into sexual experiences that they do not want, which is another piece of the disempowerment.
And it, again, I keep hearing this dichotomy. We've got girl power going on all over the place, and young women getting into science and improving their educations, and yet this sort of thing is probably more prevalent. Would that be a fair guess?
Yeah, you know, we do. It's definitely the case that we have a whole generation of pop stars that is dressing like sex workers, for one thing, right?
Yeah.
And this kind of twerking it, shaking it, I own it, this is how I express my power. I mean, on one hand, sure, we want women to have total sexual sovereignty and freedom. I mean, that is part of our good fight as feminists. And it's really important to look at the research, which actually tells us, you know, the American Psychological Association's task force on the sexualization of girls actually found that self-objectification, which is defined as a key process whereby girls and women treat and think about their bodies as objects of others' desires, that this process of self-objectification actually leads to decreased condom use and decreased sexual assertion. And so I like to give that information out to young women as well when I'm speaking to them.
We're talking with Bree Mathers, who is founder of Love the Skin You're In and author of The Freedom to Blossom. She is a feminist activist who works with young women on how their body image affects your life. This show is Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. And support for Vashon, for Voice of Vashon programming is provided by the Vashon Loop, Islanders' alternative newspaper offering free news, information, arts, and entertainment from the people since 2001. It's your chance to get into the loop at VashonLoop.com. Bree, I want to ask you about the culture and the trajectory of women's body image through our culture. What is it about our culture that has brought us to this point where, yeah, this is a mouthful, right? That has brought us to this point of young women and even women of all ages who define themselves and their value by a very narrow image, physical image.
Well, this is where I like to refer to my mentor, Rhianne Eisler's work, and in her groundbreaking book, The Chalice and the Blade, you know, she talks about the rise of domination systems and the spectrum between domination and partnership. And I really think she nails it in her research. And when she researched back 10 and 30,000 years ago, she found these partnership cultures, and the thing that these cultures shared in common was that they were goddess-worshipping cultures, and the female body was actually seen as a source of life and light and rejuvenation, and they didn't know that men had anything to do with reproduction, and so it was just the female body was just seen as this sacred vessel, and the babies were coming forth from her in the same way that fruit was dropping from the trees, And this worked in our favor. Because when the women were worshipped, what also went along with that was a partnership, collaborative model of leadership wherein men and women were equal and, you know, the social customs worked in favor of the women, the men, the children, and the planet as well. And so, you know, there's been the rises and falls in domination and partnership systems throughout history. And certainly where we all are today in terms of young women's experience of objectification, it is reflective of a domination system. I mean, certainly mainstream pornography, you know, 90% of what these 12-year-olds first see when they get on these sites is violence. And so that, of course, would be reflective of a domination system that is in full swing.
Violence against women.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, now this was quite a while ago, when MTV first started and music mm-hmm. videos were popular. I had two sons, and they started watching MTV, and I noticed on MTV that so many of those music videos were stories or visual images of violent sexual behavior against women. Mm-hmm. I made them stop watching MTV. Where does that come from? What is the source of that, and has it intensified? This was 20-some years ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think this has only escalated. I mean, I don't go to most Hollywood movies that are put out just because of the violence that's out there. You know, sex and violence apparently sell. And so movie makers are looking for top dollar, and they're looking for what is going to be the most successful at the box office. And, you know, that's just part of the package. But that's why I think we need a real shift in what we value. And that's why I love Rianne's work so much, is because if we were to value, you know, caring economic structure, we would be valuing the work of women, we would be valuing women minorities, and we would have a much more, you know, reciprocal, respectful, equitable, and sustainable world.
Getting back to the idea of body image in the media, what do you think mm-hmm. about? I have noticed some movements in the direction of things like Big and Beautiful, catalogs that include larger-sized models showing their clothing, websites that are about Big and Beautiful. Do you see that sort of movement as some sort of mitigation of this tyranny of body image?
Well, I mean, it's a step in the right direction in the sense that, you know, the average dress size sold in Canada is a size 14, so it allows for more women, you know, to fit inside of what it is to be called beautiful, you know, and so in that sense, in that way, it's certainly a step forward. I think that it's also important to recognize what real advancement is, and, you know, real advancement is really about those good social policies that work for all of us. It is about equal pay for equal work.
How does that, tell me how that connects with body image?
Well, you know, I think that everything intersects. My concern with young women is that in this pressure to be eye candy, you know, this kind of pressure cooker, this cultural pressure cooker that they're growing up in. And I had a girl who was in grade 5 come up to me after my talk at Washington Lee High School in Arlington, Virginia on Monday. And she was in tears, and her mom was in tears. And she said, you know, all my friends are starting to dress sexy now, and I don't feel comfortable with it. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm reaching a point wherein the work that I do actually needs to reach, you know, a younger audience. My concern wow. with their growing minds and brains is that they actually buy into this idea that being eye candy is the greatest thing that we can aspire to. And the fact that you have young women growing up believing that their lovability is somehow inextricably linked to their sexual availability and sexual performance, to me, is a real sort of, you know, crisis in body image yeah. And a crisis in female power. So it all goes together, because on the other side of that, you have again, the Center for Partnership Studies did a study on 89 different nations around the world. And, of course, what they found was that, you know, when women occupy more parliamentary seats, we see more caregiving legislation being passed through. And actually that, you know, that women are, and their status is a greater indicator of a country's long-term economic prosperity and, you know, social well-being than the GDP actually is. And so what we really need from this generation of young women is for them to be envisioning themselves as leaders of a better world, and for them to be honing those strengths and the strengths that we find in women's leadership, which tends to be collaborative, and for them to be seeing themselves in the highest offices in the land. And I do feel a sense of great concern over this sort of media barrage that is teaching them that, you know, the greatest self-esteem they can find or the place where they should be deriving their worth is in being trinkets or bribes and nothing more.
When you work with these groups of young women, how do you bring them together and bring them to an understanding of the what you just described, of the idea that their value is far more than their beauty, far beyond? How do you get them to that point?
Yeah, it's pretty magical.
That's tough, yeah.
I mean, I feel like my work is shamanic. I mean, I've definitely honed it over many years. I've spoken to nearly 100,000 young women so far, and we go on a journey. And I start with some hard-hitting sort of media literacy images. We start deconstructing them together. I get the girls up emulating poses. They're laughing. As a community, they're laughing. And that gets us all kind of opened up and feeling a little bit looser. And then we go on this journey, and then we take a deeper dive into, you know, what it's like when someone winds up struggling with disordered eating, and then also the impact that the comments that we make, either in the school hallways or online, are actually having on one another. And we're able to talk about the fact that we have become, over the last 40 years, we have become so much less empathetic, and we're able to talk about the systems of power that are pressing all of us, and how when we, you know, chew each other up and spit one another out, that's exactly what this like multi-conglomerate fire-breathing dragon wants us to do, because as long as we're in competition with one another, we're going to feel a sense of alienation and fear, and we're not going to be sourcing our strength from the very thing that can lead us out of this mess, which is sisterhood and solidarity. And so I've just found a way to weave all of these themes in. I'm getting goosebumps while I talk. In a way that opens up hearts, and it lands in this place, Susan, where I say to them, what has gotten lost inside of this culture is that the most important part of our bodies is our heart. And that's something that no one disagrees with. And when we remember that the heart is basically needs to be the touchstone from which we're all living, then that enables us to hold, you know, to hold self-compassion where it needs to be in order for us to make it through personally. And it also enables us and empowers us to hold one another in compassion and recognize that fundamentally we are all in this together, and that moving forward, it is all of us or none of us.
That is powerful, powerful stuff. Bree, have you done any follow-ups, or do you do follow-ups with these groups of young women to see whether they've been able to embrace these ideas and actually move forward with them in a more positive way than they might have otherwise?
Yeah, it's wonderful that you mentioned this. So one of the organizations that I've been working with is the Global CoLab Network, and they are based out of Arlington, Virginia. Their founding director is Linda Staley, and she works on bringing people together in living room salons to discuss social issues and create social change. And so we have had small groups of young women after each talk meet in her living room to talk about the issues. And I was thrilled because I was just back up in Arlington last week and early this week, and we were able to meet with some of the young women whom I had spoken to last November and just get their feedback about the kind of momentum and sharing that's actually happening as a result of the talk. And what was reflected back to me over and over again was that in their school, it's no longer cool to body shame, fat shame, slut shame, that the new cool is lifting each other up and supporting one another. And then you have one of their student leaders has started an Instagram channel that's like all about body positivity. And she's actually, her name's Avery Dick, and she's actually starting a support group for middle schoolers. And she's connected with Sun and Moon Yoga, the local yoga studio owned by Annie Moyers there. And she's got a space where she can hold these conversations with the sort of grade 8 girls at their school, and it is a beautiful ripple effect that we're seeing happening.
That is so exciting and so refreshing to hear. I just did my morning scramble show right before this, and the theme was hope for tomorrow. You're giving me some of that. hope for tomorrow for the
That's
yeah
what it's all about.
For our women of tomorrow. And I do know that at least among the women that I know, and we're of the 60s generation, sisterhood has grown with time. I think my feeling is that women of our generation who went through professional years where there was sexism in the workplace and sexual harassment in the workplace started to begin to recognize that sisterhood was our salvation. How much do you work with women of older generations?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that the Global Collab actually does, is they connect older generations with younger generations so that we can all find a way to move forward together. And I have certainly addressed, you know, corporate audiences and audiences of women with this message as well. And it's just as relevant, and it's practically the same talk, except when you talk about sex and you're talking about their daughters. But really, you know, the whole conversation around body image and how we're relating to our bodies, you know, it's the same conversation. But of course, you're having to look at aging as well. And again, Naomi Wolf, in her book, The Beauty Myth, she says, you know, we live in a culture where there is this competition, and the woman who dies the thinnest and with the least wrinkles wins. Mm-hmm. So, you know, contending with what it is to age as a woman in this culture and grow increasingly invisible within that aging process.
Yes.
I mean, that's definitely a conversation, you know, that is a big piece of talking about body image.
Yeah, starting to disappear as an aging woman. There's both benefits and deficits to that process. Once you start disappearing, you can decide, I don't care what I do or what people think. But it's also, there's a sense of being demeaned or disempowered because you do disappear. So it sometimes requires more assertiveness, perhaps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you find that with women of older generations? Is that a typical reaction? Are they getting more assertive? Are they disappearing with the whole idea of body image?
I think I haven't done a lot with older women in particular in terms of having those conversations with them specifically. I've heard both, though. You know, the conversations that I have had, I've heard both. That, you know, a woman who's coming into her later 50s, approaching 60s is suddenly realizing, okay, life is sort of going to be different from here on out. And, you know, this is all symptomatic of this culture, because if we lived in a culture that valued women, we would be valuing the wisdom that comes with age, right?
Yes.
We would be valuing the crone. If we valued women for their voices and their imaginations rather than valuing them as objects, then we would be celebrating what it is to age. And unfortunately, even the youngest of girls is consumed with recognizing that she has a choice. She can be hot or she can be invisible.
Yeah.
Because if she's not putting herself out there, you know, basically for public consumption in this sexualized way, she's going to feel invisible. And I think that you know, that's a pretty scary place for an 11-year-old girl to be.
Yeah, for any girl. We have just about a minute left, and I have one last quick question, Bree Mathers. And
sure.
That is the whole idea of physical fitness. How does that work with women's body image? Is it a mitigation of the idea of being an object, or is it an intensification of that idea?
Oh, I think that physical fitness is really important for our mental health and physical health and well-being. Those studies have shown that girls that are active tend to struggle less with body image woes, and it's a really important part of this picture that we're talking about. It's also important to recognize that fitness does not equal thinness, and that's another one of those, things that has been co-opted by the health industries and health magazines, wherein, you're seeing these women, they've got to have abs and, be kind of fat-free, when actually, fitness is about your heart rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's about whether you can, run a few miles and, not be huffing and puffing and still feel pretty good. So we've got a lot of work to do in that department, but I would say that physical activity is something that we should all be embracing.
Bree Mathers, I cannot thank you enough for joining us here on Real Talk. I can't believe our half hour is over. Bree, tell us how to find out more about you and about Love the Skin You're In.
Yeah, sure. So you can visit me on the web at BrieMathers.com. That's BrieMathers.com. And you can friend me on Facebook. I'm under Lindsay Bree Mathers. And Instagram, if you have a young woman who would like to bring this assembly to her school, we are lovetheskinyourein.official. That's with the proper grammar. So it's lovetheskinyourein.official.
Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you'll come back. I think we have a lot more to say about this topic.
Okay, thanks so much, Susan. I enjoyed conversing with you.
And I thank everyone for listening. This has been Real Talk on The Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington.